Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio
on WGR.
Welcome back. I'll keep this short, I promise. For some reason today, I decided to stop for coffee on my way in. Mm-hmm. It's become my routine to drink coffee here in the 2 o'clock hour. There's always coffee available here. Why pay for it? So today I just decided I was going to do that. So I get in, I've got the store-bought cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And what I've, you know, been reminded of here today is that when I'm just drinking the work coffee, well, I mean, there's a pot out there that's on a burner and it's always hot.
Right.
And I'm a slow drinker. So I've had to warm up my coffee twice. And I think it makes it taste worse. And like, oh yeah, this is one reason why I don't do this. Mm-hmm. It's too much. I don't even need... With the work coffee,
and you didn't even get the big one.
No, I never
either.
Get,
I only get your
medium at the most.
I don't know what size that is,
Grande.
But I know it's not the big one.
Grande.
Yeah, I know that
officially.
Yeah,
I can never really finish it, and you know, today I'm sort of being reminded of that because I said I would keep this short, right? Because it's cold. This coffee is now cold.
Not worth it.
It was not. I mean, I like it, but
sure. Right.
Was not a plus EV move.
Right.
As it turns out. Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. Thanks for sitting through that. Sal, so this is one of those days where you can't watch practice, correct? Unfortunately, it's too, security's too tight.
Yeah, we're not invited. The media, we get one day. I'll be honest, like, I don't know today. I don't think today they did anything. I could be wrong because they had a community day today. Some of the players visited a local school. So a lot of times when that's happening, that's because it's their off day. But you're only allowed, I believe, 3 days of OTAs through a week. So they have to plan those out accordingly for the players. They don't go 5 days for sure.
So then maybe there's enough license to sort of ask a broad question here. I'm not sure. I probably should have run this by you earlier, but I know you'll have thoughts. Are they done in free agency? You have a collection of recent Bills, especially on defense, like recent Bills players that are, I think, not signed yet where they could. I know it's a new scheme and everything like that. Maybe it should tell us everything that, you know, they're not back already. And then also receiver, and I guess I dare to include that in this question. Thinking of my fantasy show last night, and they're talking about Diggs and Deebo Samuel and Ayuk, even, who would have to be traded, like just names that are possibly available or certainly available. And I just kind of wanted to ask you if you think it's just no, there's no point in bringing the Bills up for any of these players.
I would say there would be points to bring them up. Like, you're right. I think you could think about some of these guys. I'm thinking more about like Tre'Davious White. Right. Like, I still think they could use something on the outside, another outside corner, some depth. That's a player who, you know him, he knows you. I know it's a new system, but you know he'll come in ready to work. So you don't have to do anything now. You can evaluate what you have. Maybe Toriano Pride becomes something you're like, okay, we're good here. Maybe not, though, and you feel like you need a little something more. To answer your question, literally, are they done with free agency? And I know we don't think you mean literally. No, I mean, they literally signed a guy today.
Right.
Demetrius Flanagan
Powell, right?
Right?
Yeah. So, which is funny, he actually was a converted defensive back. He's a smaller linebacker. He's more of a, to me, a special teams guy, more of a kind of big nickel type of guy. That's really what he would play, I think, in this defense. But I think it's more special teams. So, no, they're not done in free agency from that respect. Are they done in free agency from anything notable? Yeah, I don't really know who's out there. Like, is there a notable name out there that, you know, they could think about grabbing? I don't even know what money they would have to do that with. Again, maybe a guy like a Tre'Davious White. I'm not going to include Matt Milano, but he's not signed, right? If they don't like what they have at linebacker, could they visit something like that? Sure. I think it's notable that they haven't given out 27 or 58 for numbers yet, right? I don't think it has to mean anything.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just something you notice.
Yeah, it is. You know, I don't know that we've really talked much about this. We've made mention, and Mike just did it again, the list of guys, and you went right to Tre'Davious White. It's pretty remarkable how many guys that were not just on the Bills, but were playing major roles, starting roles, or like, you know, most snap percentage of snap count at a position type roles on this team that just aren't signed. I mean, it's kind of stark. Like, it makes me respect how good a season they had. If they had so many guys that were, as the league has judged them, maybe at the end of the line. Like, we'll see. These guys may get a flyer taken on them, and maybe that holds in any of the names that have come up here. But, man, it's really, really something that they were as good as they were, and so many key guys that played big roles are still not employed.
Yeah, especially on defense, right?
And right.
I would extend that to, I mean, I know that the defense wasn't great, like, and we can say, like, the problems they had, or in the playoffs, they certainly had, you know, some challenges and, you know, didn't have enough depth, and that wound up being their undoing. But I look at the job that they did on defense and what Sean McDermott did, it was arguably one of his better coaching jobs on the defensive side last year, considering everything we're talking about. I mean, they had guys that aren't even in the league now, and yet they were still going out there and, you know, staying in games, making plays, and being a part of a team that, you know, ultimately got to the second round of the playoffs. So I think that is absolutely a fair point to make. But as I've said many times, I think the head coach switch was just as much to do about the defense than it was about to do with the head coach, if not more, which is you can't change the defense if Sean McDermott's your head coach. And if you want to change the defense, and maybe the Bills and their front office and their scouts, you know, that's their job, right? Let's look around the league. What's happening? And if their pro personnel department felt, look, we got guys here that just shouldn't really be playing right now. And we know that this head coach, that these are his guys, this is his defense. We got to change everything. That's how you get to changing out the head coach who's a defensive head coach.
Yep. We talked about yesterday for a minute the run versus pass element of this, and whether Leonard can sustain what the Bills were best at over the years with McDermott on defense was pass defense. And even last year, I mean, the numbers are really good. They were literally first in the league in passing yards allowed last year. They were 28th against the run. Maybe ironic that Denver only ran for 70 yards in that playoff game. Like, it was not. Jacksonville, I've said this a lot. I think if Jacksonville, especially Tootin, but even Etienne, if they had just leaned into that harder, they win that game. I mean, they were getting gashed pretty good, the Bills, in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't want to say they got cute, because you only say that when a team loses. But they they didn't do, easy in hindsight, maybe enough of that. But that's not how Denver did it. I mean, Denver did not run the ball in that playoff game, and they still put up 33 points. So, I don't know. In the end, the run defense isn't what got them beat.
No, there were times where the run defense was really good last year. They go to Carolina. Remember that game? Like, Carolina has this really great, you know, potent rushing attack, and the Bills go to Carolina, and I'm going to look up the stats right now.
114.
Last year, they ran for 4.1 yards a carry. They had, what, 114 total yards. You'll take that all day against that team. But, you know, you look at the big numbers they gave up. 238 in the opener against the Baltimore Ravens, 130 against Miami a couple weeks later, and then New Orleans runs for 189 on them, by the way. They have a nice little run. Atlanta, they give up over 200. They give up over 200 against Tampa Bay, close to 200 again against Miami. Big numbers. And then, but you had games where they actually did a nice job. They kept Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. I know these aren't great rushing attacks. Kansas City down below, New England the first time they played them. You know, so it kind of was feast or famine to me for the run game issue sometimes. I also want to point out, and I think this hasn't been talked about enough, which is a big part of the issue with the run game. When we think about teams, like when we think about, okay, they're just not good against the run, I think it's a general thought in football to think about the middle of defense. While that means they're not good up front, they're not good in the middle, they're not good, you know, at nose tackle, at defensive tackle. I don't think that's where the Bills had their biggest issues last year. The biggest issues were maybe on the edge defending the run last year. Like, teams were killing them on the edge. Joey Bosa was terrible against defending the run last year. We all saw that at times. It wasn't just him, though. And I think a big part of what they're trying to do with this new defensive coordinator and this new defense is to fix that, which is we're not going to get beat on the edge because this defense schematically is going to help that. And we have a guy, Greg Rousseau, who we like to do this, but Bradley Chubb is very good at this. TJ Parker, we drafted, is very good at this. We're going to funnel everything inside, and that really wasn't our issue last year. I think the Bills have made a concerted effort to fix the edge of the defense when it comes to the run game this year with under Jim Leonard.
There were a couple of big ones where, like, Bijan.
That's right.
They gave up 8 30-plus yard touchdown runs last year. Travion Henderson, 2 in that game in Foxborough. Yep. And the Bills, for their part, had 5 such touchdown runs. They were all 40-plus. Cook, 3 times. Or 4 times, actually. But you can remember those plays, like the Bijan one, Achan, you know, in Miami. Sean Tucker, right, Sal? I mean, Syracuse guy that didn't have much of a season overall, didn't play a lot, but still had a day here.
Sal, as you're talking about this, the defense and what they want to improve on as far as defending the run and funneling everything inside, my brain went to Terrell Bernard. And that's not a guy. I know we heard from Jim Leonard yesterday, and we went over a lot of what he talked about. And I don't think Dorian Williams came up in here yesterday when we were visiting with you, but I know Leonard mentioned him as someone specifically who has a chance to really like carve out a role or something to that effect in this defense. How much of a better feel, if at all, do you have now of the fit of Bernard in the middle of this defense?
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have felt since this defense switched that Terrell Bernard would be a better fit in this new defense than he was in the former defense. And I've felt for a while watching Terrell Bernard that he probably is more suited in the NFL to be a 3-4 inside linebacker than a 4-3 middle linebacker simply because of his size. I think he's fine as a, like, the way he plays is fine as a 4-3 middle linebacker. I just think the size wears on him, right? He's just too small to withstand a 17-game season and the rigors of what goes against. It's not that he can't do the job. He can. But, you know, that really weighs on you and wears on you, and that's why he's had some injuries. I think this new defense will keep him healthier. I think Terrell Bernard in this new defense is going to be a much more frequent blitzer. And that's going to be a big deal for the Bills. He's a good blitzer, and I think they'll use him in that role more, to be able to blitz and to be able to find seams. And he doesn't have to be just go take on, you know, big offensive linemen all the time and do the role of a traditional 4-3 middle backer. So I do think that that's going to be a really nice fit for him. Now, we also know that he's still, in whatever capacity, recovering from an ankle injury last year, or making sure at least that they're not doing anything dumb so he doesn't have any setbacks and they want him full go. And we talked about this with him this past week, and Jim Leonard's mentioned that. Not that he can't, he's participating, right? But you just want to be smart with these guys right now because you do want him fully healthy. But next to him, yes, Leonard did talk about Dorian Williams. It's funny because he said a lot of really nice things about Dorian Williams. I thought he really talked really well about Caleb Elarms-Orr, the new rookie middle inside linebacker. I think, guys, the more that this is going on, this is the biggest open competition on the team.
Linebacker, like, we could talk about left guard, linebacker. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, we could talk about left guard, and I think that's Alec Anderson's to lose. Like, yes, it's a competition. They're not going to hand it to him, but I think Alec Anderson, that's his job. If he doesn't win it, then that's on him. To me, like, I don't know if I could handicap a guy right now at inside linebacker. You're going to see most likely Dorian Williams line up and take the first snap at training camp because he's a 4-year veteran over a rookie. I get it. I think absolutely Caleb Elarms-Orr could win that job.
You know, you mentioned him. That's a 4th-round pick. We had a word on Igbinosun yesterday. That's a late second-round pick at corner. T.J. Parker, the first player the Bills drafted, early second in this draft, trading out of the first round. What are his prospects for you? How high is the ceiling, even as a rookie?
Well, I don't think the ceiling is super high. I do think the floor is pretty good, though. I like what he can bring to the table right away to be a contributor and a guy that you can trust to be on the field. I don't think he's going to be a guy that you're going to be getting these wild plays from, and, you know, he's out there going and, you know, like is he going to be on the all-rookie team? You know, I mean, like, those are probably really too lofty of expectations. But I think that the way I see him and fitting into this defense, we're not going to blink too much when you see him on the field on first and second down sometimes. I'm like, okay, yep, he can do the job. He'll be fine. He's going to know exactly where to be. He's going to do his job properly. I think that's why they drafted him. They needed, you know, Brandon Bean compared his game to Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb's like the perfect fit for this defense. They targeted him specifically. They hired Jim Leonard. Bradley Chubb comes from Bradley Chubb's first year in Miami, I think, was under Vance Joseph. Well, Vance Joseph was in Denver. Where did Jim Leonard come from? Denver, right? So, like, I think that they identified him right away as a guy. Okay, he can come in. He can play this spot. We really like him. We need guys just like him. T.J. Parker, Brandon Bean said, has a very similar game. So I think he's going to fit seamlessly into what they want to do. Sure, will there be some, you know, growing pains as a rookie? That might happen. But I think this is a three-down player. They're going to use him and not really worry about necessarily protecting him and just kind of putting him in as the rotation. So to answer your question, Mike, I don't think the floor is super high. I'm sorry, I don't think the ceiling is super high in year one, but I think his floor is pretty high where he's going to be on the field and contribute.
How about Rousseau in this defense, Sal? I feel like we've really talked much about him and the transition, however much of one it will be, right? I assume less or no hand on the ground, listed as a linebacker. Do you think this has the potential to sort of free him up, or, I don't know, could he get bogged down trying to figure out how to subtly play a different position?
He might be the guy in the front seven I'm the most interested in this question, because I don't know. I think Greg Rousseau, his physical traits just allow him to be a good football player, right? I mean, like, I know that, you know, the Bills made him a first round pick, and there's always this debate on, you know, well, he hasn't even had double digit sacks. I get it. He's a good football player. He helps out this team. Yep. And, you know, they gave him a nice contract, right? He's going into his sixth season. He had, what, 7 sacks last year, 8 the year before that. But he's a good run defender, and he just does everything really solid. And that brings me back to Chubb and T.J. Parker, and those guys are good at that. But I'm just really interested in this question myself, Bulldog. I don't know. Like, I could see this could go 2 different ways. I think we could be talking, you know, halfway through the year about, oh my God, like, geez, he is so good in this scheme. Like, wow, great. They have unlocked him. He goes inside, uses his length. They can move him around. We could also be halfway through the year going, yeah, you know, this just is one of those guys that they might need to get out of this contract because he does not fit in this scheme. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
I should have asked him at that blackjack thing.
Right, yeah, Mike.
That was my chance.
Mike, sure to
get some, you know, some
blackjack table
one-on-one questions.
All right.
I sat next to him at that at Seneca Niagara, the celebrity blackjack.
I didn't hear much about the. How did you do in that?
You could laugh. I played great. Okay, let me just start with that.
So
I played great.
He didn't win, so
I did not win any of the first 9 hands.
Oh my God.
And one of the Lee Evans was at my table.
How are you giving yourself a I played great if you didn't win any of the 9 hands?
There are good and bad plays in blackjack, and even in a tournament, you asked me now. Even in a tournament context, I made a couple of moves like against my table that they tell you that you want to do.
Yeah.
But I was just, you know, I was having fun with it. And Evans, who I have known a little bit and really like Lee Evans, he was across at the same he won the table. And at one point he said to me, "It only takes one hand, Mike." I'm like, yeah, but that was it. The one that I just lost, that was the one hand. Like, you're not, I had 20. Okay. I wasn't supposed to lose that one. I had 20.
Yeah.
But
are you book rule guy at the blackjack table?
Usually. But in
me too.
In a tournament, you're not playing against the dealer as much as you're playing against the, like, Rousseau and Evans. Like, that's who I was trying to beat them. There was a hand that we all lost. Like, the dealer got blackjack or something and the whole table lost. And Rousseau was like, oh, like, no, that's good. Because those guys bet more than we did. So that's good for us. We lost less. You got to have some of those too. All right. That's your blackjack quota. Back, if I may, back to talking about like free agent possibilities. Mm-hmm. I just would be curious for your thoughts on Diggs. Not even necessarily for the Bills if it's so unlikely or just not ever going to happen. Deebo Samuel too. Like, we've done it for years. We can always make an argument that the Bills could use another weapon. I know those guys are older, but I wonder, Diggs especially, because of course of his history here. Have you thought about like what kind of fit maybe there is for him somewhere? Do you like a certain team for him? Perhaps he did. New England ran him off, but he did have what? Did he have 1,000 yards for them last year? He had a season.
Very good year, I would say. Maybe not great, but very good.
I mean, I don't know what team wants to kind of deal with that, with everything that goes along with it. But at the same time, yeah, you're bringing in a guy who just year after year seems to produce. I would say that would stun me. Like if you woke up tomorrow and found out like the Bills were doing that.
Wow.
That would stun me almost more than anything I could think of this offseason.
Yeah.
Like, just not, it's not happening. He's not coming back to Buffalo. The Bills aren't to me interested in that in any capacity. But, you know, there's just a lot of noise around that. And I just wonder, I don't know if there's a team that you could see.
I like Vegas, you know, Sal.
I was thinking about Baltimore, right? Because aren't they a team that kind of does things like that once in a while? Like you feel, oh, well, they just signed Stephon Diggs. You know, well, Vegas, I'm interesting. Yeah, interesting there. They're trying to win. You know, they're trying to kind of turn everything around over there. But, no, I don't know about him specifically. And he is getting older. And I think there's been, over the last few years, maybe a little bit diminishing returns as the season's gone on, even last year a little bit in New England. And we saw that in Buffalo before his tenure ended here. I don't think the Bills are looking to add a wide receiver at this point, especially like a name, like a guy that like, oh, that's interesting. But I would tell you, the last 2 weeks I've gone out to practice for the days we can watch, and Josh Palmer's working off to the side, right? And he had injuries last year. And
yep.
Shakir had a thing.
Yeah, yeah. And Shakir had in the offseason. You mean in the offseason, right?
Yeah.
When he had the But he's been out there working. But like Josh Palmer hasn't. I mean, he's there.
It looks
but he's
like it started right back up where we left off in January.
Let's just play this out. What if you just really unsure? Is Josh Palmer going to play this year? Is there going to be injuries? Is he like? What does that look like? Because now you're looking at DJ Moore, Khalil Shakir, a questionable Keon Coleman because of everything, a questionable Skylar Bell because he's a rookie and you hope, but like now you are at a spot where you got to start thinking about maybe adding someone.
Ravens are so, this came up on ADP chasing last night. Like, so, I mean, in a sense, perfect for the Diggs idea. Remember Dez Bryant in the playoff game here for Baltimore, the Taron Johnson game, Dez Bryant's getting targets.
Didn't they just do Hopkins?
DeAndre Hopkins. Right? Yes, they've done plenty of this kind of thing. Bolden, was he late stage Bolden when he was in Baltimore? Like, sort of like that's the right team for the stereotype.
Yeah.
Would be. I like it for Vegas, Diggs for Vegas, even though the obvious points you can make about, you know, lifestyle. But, you know, they could use one more. He could be their Myers. They traded Myers last year, possession. He would have. Possibly, I can't say for sure. If not for the injury mid-season in Houston, he would be on a Mike Evans-like streak of 8 straight 1,000-yard years.
Yeah.
Diggs. But, you know, he doesn't have that because of what happened in Houston.
Yeah.
But he was on that kind of pace.
I wonder what's happening. Do we know what's going on with Davante Adams? Could L.A. be a team that could do something like that? Like, they could use a guy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That would scare me for fantasy because those two guys are so locked in. But people do talk about the Rams as a team that could use one more. That's right. Their wide receiver 3 names are really like you couldn't even name them.
Yes.
So
well, there's a guy on their roster I'm looking at named True Edwards. I don't even know. And his T-R-U, no E, True Edwards.
Yep. True or false, he goes by.
What do you think happens to Ayuk? Because he might be the best player. Well, when we last saw him, I mean, what is that? Is it going on 2 years now?
That's got to be June 1,
this
right?
This is such a bizarre situation. Like, I just, and I don't feel like we really hear anything about it, but you're right. June 1, maybe we'll get some action here in the next few days because with, you know, June 1 coming, A.J. Brown, whatever.
Yeah. Washington.
I tell you, well, and I know this is something you've probably talked about in your fantasy circles, Mike, but all this stuff with Malik Nabers is interesting, right? And the Giants are right there, and, you know, they're trying to kind of elevate themselves a little bit. And I wonder what they're going to do at wide receiver.
That's a good one. That's a really sticky one because Nabers will be back. So how big of an investment would they want to make in a player? But they might think we don't really have an X receiver to start the season here. And we're trying to establish a quarterback. And yeah, I don't know. Darnell Mooney is probably not that guy for the Giants. He's who is there. Okay, Sal, thanks for your time as always.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
It's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
And while we're just throwing around names of guys in the NFL.
Naming some guys.
Josh Jacobs. If you are, like myself, a fantasy sicko, well, I recommend last night's show. We spent a half an hour on Josh Jacobs to start the show and what Green Bay could do about it. I'll just say quickly here, I wouldn't expect them to do anything soon unless they know it's bad, bad. I mean, the charges are very severe, but you know what happens a lot of the time. You know, a suspension could be years off or something.
Right.
I think there's a very reasonable chance he is suspended for some of this season. Exempt list, one of those. But I doubt Green Bay acts on it until they know that. Like trading for Kamara or something like that.
Right.
And if they don't do anything.
The news on that today was like not proceeding with the charges as of now.
Well,
I think, right? Is that? I don't want to get that wrong, but I think that's what that was.
He was released today.
He was released, and they're not pursuing it.
Out of jail.
Yeah, but I don't think he's not exonerated. It's just we don't have it right now. Maybe they'll revisit, I think, is what happened today.
And the league does not need anything necessarily from the court system to act on a player.
Right.
There have been guys that did not get charged or, you know, were found guilty of anything that were suspended.
Mm-hmm.
That can go either way. Jacobs in Green Bay. 803-0550, Mike Schopen and the Bulldog. Let's talk some more Sabres here. Alex Tuch, the future there. The Sabres do have some decisions to make, and we'll spend some more time on that when we return.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Yarmo once again expressed his desire to have me back on the team. Obviously, he'll be in touch with my agent. And throughout the playoffs, it hasn't been a focus of mine at all. Obviously, the next month or so, I'm going to have to make some decisions here.
Alex Tuch back really only about a week ago, maybe exactly. Last Wednesday would have been Tuch and Yarmo and Lindy.
That's right. A bunch of younger guys went on Tuesday, and Alex Lyon. And then, yeah, that's right. Last Wednesday was Yarmo and Lindy and the Kingpin guys, I guess.
We were talking with Luke Fox earlier, and he or you made a point about how when you go pointless in a 7-game series like Tuch did, and you're making $10.5 million a year,
right,
it's a bigger story than it was. And that's the, maybe you could say, cruel reality of it. Like, always players are being judged through their contracts like that. I mean, Tuch isn't, you know, in poverty or anything like that. But you get into that $10-plus million range, it's just what we talk about.
Yeah,
new context for
right.
you.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a bargain. Like, a lot of their guys have been a bargain. And so when a guy that's been a bargain doesn't produce, it's more like sort of, oh, well, too bad. We could have used that.
That was supposed to happen.
Like maybe. Tough luck, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, you're making 10 and a half. There's like, look in the mirror. There's nowhere to hide. You're expected to come through. That's it. So, you know, that's where he's headed, I think. Like, whether it's here or somewhere else, like, he's going to get. Like that, I do not think that the playoff series, maybe the playoff series throws a team or two that were thinking about getting in it out of it. Like, you know, it was going to be a lot. We were going to regret the last few years anyway. Oh, he went pointless. All right, let's do something else. He's got better ideas. But I still think there'll be a half a dozen, if not more, maybe 10 teams that are just, yeah, cap's going up. This guy's a two-way force, kills penalties, scores 60 points a year, big. Okay, yeah. He's going to get paid.
He will refuse to let his moderate to severe playoff drought define him.
I think that's right. Yeah.
So therefore, he'll take Mercurius. Apolixum Lexum. Do not take Mercurius if you are allergic to Mercurius. Or, you know, just check, you know what, you just basically just check with your cardiologist and your endocrinologist and your ear, nose, and throat doctor And you're gynecologist. Why not? Check with all these people and make sure it's okay, it's safe for you. You could develop, however, this is a partial list of symptoms. It's 37 things, but it's still not complete. Cirrhosis could ensue. Fingernail damage.
I was about to go somewhere else on Tuck, and I've completely forgotten where I was going to go.
Really?
Is it?
Not there?
No. Well, no. Do I have to be dug in? Like, I feel like I'm just sort of, I don't know what to do with Alex Tuck. Make a call, all right? Like, I'm on the radio. You want to sign this guy or not? I think I'm a yes. I think I want to be a yes. That you are a contending team, and I don't think you should be scared off of 7 games. I don't want you to change the goaltending off of the Montreal series. So why do I want to believe Alex Tuck flew into a cliff suddenly in game 87 of the season or whatever the hell it was? Your Stanley Cup contending window is wide open. You are in it. You are not approaching it. You don't need a couple things to go your way. You, I think, proved, you should have proven to yourself, certainly proved to me, you're a real tomato ketchup Stanley Cup contending team. Does that team let an assistant captain who plays in all situations walk away having won nothing? This is not Tampa where they won cups and they're like, oh, well,
it's not
sentimentality is fine, but Steven Stamkos, you know, you got to go because, you know, we're trying to keep winning here and you're too old now. We don't have that. You don't have that luxury. So I'm listening to all cases. I mean, I understand that it is not, it's not an easy one. But, man, I think additions are called for. Not major ones, like you're close. Divesting yourself of that guy? I mean, I don't want to get too far into what it'll mean to the room because they'll get over it if it happens. Like they'll be back here and they'll be ready to play. But he's the face of guys that we want to be, guys we want guys to want to be here. He's it. I think you got to get it over. I think you got to find a way to get it done. I'm not saying he walks in and says, I want 12 and you just go, okay. But I'm hopeful that like whatever numbers you've heard attached to them, that's just, you know, there's the posturing and there's the, what we really can live with number and that they just get there. Cause he's going to get, the offers are going to be huge. If he gets to July 1st, he's going to get huge offers. So you're going to head that off at the pass with probably 10 a year.
Which isn't necessarily even possible. That's up to Tuck.
Sure, to an extent it is.
I want to go find out, and you can't change my mind.
Yep.
Whatever the maximum allowable contract is would seem the utmost insanity, but he could still theoretically say, like, no, I told you.
I want to see what
I want to find out
what's out there.
I'm not closed to signing with you, but I want to find out. He can't do that until then. So if that's his approach, then you just have to wait. Mike is next. Hello.
Good evening, guys. How are you today?
Great, Mike.
So, you know, I went to game one of the Boston series and game seven of Montreal, which was really tough. But when you look around the arena and you look at everybody that's going there, there's one, I noticed a lot of Tuck jerseys. And I think that guy has kind of toughed it out with us during some of the darker days. And I think he's owed it. And I think that the 7 games, no points, it's tough to deal with. It's stunk. I was really kind of hoping he was going to pull something out or get the game winner and send us to the next round. But I think we can let that one slide to build around him. I think that guy should stay here. It would be a real tough pill to swallow to let him go. I say pay the man. Pay the man his money. He deserves it. He earned it. And I think you can build off of that. Unless there's something like crazy coming down the pipeline in the terms of a trade. I don't know who the front runners would be, but I think we could put our focus in another direction, and he's somebody to really build off of. He's got Buffalo written all over him, and I'm in full support of keeping him. So that's what I got to say. Go Sabres, go Bills. Thanks for taking the call, guys.
Okay, Mike. Pay that man his money. Was that a Rounders?
That's just about that.
You know, I didn't need to bring that up, and I just did my little drug dance, which hashtag drug dance, which I enjoy. You with that tomato ketchup every time, that's vacation. Mm-hmm. I'm not the only one. I'm not sure you've seen a movie in the last 20 years either.
Oh, well, sure. But the movie Vacation is quoted by billions more people than Fletch.
That's what I don't like about it.
So you've still got that working against you.
Against you.
Against, what do you mean against me?
Well, I mean, you want to start quoting Caddyshack now? Because everybody else does it?
Well, I'm just saying. Well,
Animal House?
The point of quoting something is that it's universally recognized as, like, you don't have to explain it, which is the problem with your Fletch tangents. Is nobody knows what you're doing.
Four words. How dare you? Real tomato ketchup is not a known line from that movie that everybody, it's not ubiquitous. It's not like, oh, yeah, I remember
really?
That. I don't think so.
Oh.
I know it, but I don't think it's like common knowledge.
Oh, I think so. I think it is.
You do?
Yes, I do.
I think if it's because of you.
Well,
if it is,
I'm so flattered.
People have heard you say it enough times where they wanted to look it up.
Real tomato ketchup, Eddie.
It's a question he asks, right? Like,
right, well, real? Well, is he holding it up and stirring it around because it's actually just like crushed tomatoes or something? It's, they can't afford ketchup.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say this about Tuck, and we'll have all summer to talk about it, or at least some period of time. I doubt anything changes tonight. But you wanted to get to a take on Tuck. You wanted to get to a position.
Hold me down. I'm going to tell you this is what I think, and I think they should sign him.
And tell me if this is not accurate. You sound like you're maybe 75-25 to do it. 80-20 to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You wanted to get to 100.
Yeah.
I am the same, about the same ratio on the other side.
Okay, well, what a pair we are.
I don't hate the idea. I certainly understand it. You have to remember that it's not entirely up to you. Well, as far as we know, anyway, unless Tuck has told them I would sign for this, then that is mostly up to the Sabres if they can come up with the room and everything else. But I am not really scared of losing them, actually. And I'll say quickly something from the other day that I think it's important to me. The best a GM can do is not just necessarily sign the top guy. You know, if he were on another team, we would not even talk about it. Well, maybe we would. Maybe we would. If he were coming off from Carolina, maybe we would talk. This is the Sabres' chance to be a real team, right? And go sign the top free agent. Maybe we would. But I think I'm going to like him just about as much either way. Assuming that there will be a plan B, whatever that is. We've been wrong assuming that from the Sabres before, like even last year.
I do think a good question to ask me digging in on signing him is what exactly I want to do with Osland and Hellenius and Kulik. Because there's not room for all those guys. There's not room for all of them, maybe even if Tuck's not here, let alone if he is. Where is everybody going? And I don't know if I have room for everybody.
You got to figure that out.
But that's a part of the problem that's pushing me to want to keep them is because I'm already one of the youngest, if not the youngest team in the league. And I'm going to go about upping the ante as a Stanley Cup contender by getting younger? What? That's not how it's supposed to work anyway. I'm not saying it couldn't work, but.
Right. Yeah, it's a good debate. Thanks for the call, Mike. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fischer and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.